You're listening to the OCD Stories podcast, hosted by me, Stuart Ralph. The OCD Stories is a podcast dedicated to raising awareness and understanding around obsessive compulsive symptoms. I do this through interviewing inspired therapists, psychologists, and people who have experienced OCD. Welcome to the OCD Stories.
And welcome to episode 348 of the podcast. And in this one, I got on Sean Flores, who has kindly agreed to share his story with us. And in particular, we talk about how a dream triggered OCD in a big way for him, sexual orientation-themed OCD, suicidal-themed OCD, harm-themed OCD, as well as an ADHD diagnosis, some of the possible reasons why people of colour are underrepresented in the OCD community, how he's doing now, his advocacy, and so much more. And thank you to OCD for supporting the podcast. OCD offers effective and convenient therapy available in the US and outside the US. To find out more about OCD, their therapy plans, if they currently take your insurance, or to download their free app, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories, or the link will be in the episode description. Now, it was a real pleasure to chat with Sean and hear his story, so I hope it inspires and resonates with you. And the sound quality, my side, I had an issue when I was chatting with Sean with my mic set up. So I had to switch to the original method I did the podcast in the first 70, 80 episodes, which is using my Apple headphones. So the sound quality, my end, isn't as good, but hopefully it sounds okay. And thank you as always to you guys for listening. I deeply appreciate it. And without further ado, here is Sean.
Welcome to the show, Sean.
Yes, man, it's an honor to be able to be here. It's an honor to be able to come and tell my story. But I think I'm really thankful for the platform that you do have. So, yeah, I'm pleasured, I'm honored, I'm thrilled to be on.
Yeah, thank you, Sean. It's an honor to have you on. So, as you know, I'd love to hear your OCD story. So in as little or as much detail as you want to give, it'd be good to hear that now.
Okay, yeah. So what I'm going to have to do is I'm going to have to take you to the breakdown, and then I'm gonna have to take you guys back. So what happened for me was I woke up one morning with this dream, and it was a dream of a guy in I could just see the upper back of a guy, and I just saw colorful boxes, and I woke up and I was 100% convinced I was gay. 100% convinced. Nobody could tell me any different. I went to the bathroom and I threw up. I was sick. I was anxious. I couldn't stop looking for evidence. Everywhere I went, I was always looking for evidence. And then what happened was I'd be outside, and if I could admit a guy was good looking, it would be, you're gay, you're gay, you're gay, this, that. And I was constantly being tormented with it. And as time went on, I started to just think, maybe I was gay as a result of the modeling industry that I was in. Maybe I was being turned gay. All these are logical thoughts, to be very honest. And that thought faded out for a couple of months. Then it came back. It came back. It kept coming back. It kept reoccurring. And as time went on, it migrated now to a new thought. So this is a trigger warning for anyone that's listening, but I'm going to be very open and very honest, because I think this is the only way for us to help people with OCD and for our people to understand. When I was with one of my friends one time, a female friend of mine, a random thought popped into my head, and it was just a word. The word was rape. And I absolutely had probably the biggest panic attack of my life. I ran away. I ran up the stairs and I just sat on the stairs and I was like, no. I was like, Jesus Christ, am I hearing voices? I'm like, is it, like, what's going on? And she was like, Sean, you're all right. I'm like, no, stay away from me, because I said, I don't want to hurt you. Because in my head, when I heard that intrusive thought, I believed that meant I was going to rape her, or I was a rapist. And that's so far against my values. Obviously, anyone knows with OCD, the thoughts are ego dystonic, so it's completely repugnant and against your morals and your values. But that happened, and what happened was I had this moment of epiphany when I was in that moment, right? And what happened was I realized I think that intrusive thought had come as a result of some sexual abuse that happened when I was younger, and I internalized it, and I'd called myself certain things as a result of it. So I started to deal with that and process that another time. But in that moment when my friend was with me, I begged her to leave, because I looked outside and I was like, all right, I'm not hearing that voice. I'm not hearing that word anymore, that thought. I'm okay. And then it came back. So I literally screamed and I shouted at her to leave the house, because I just was convinced that I was going to hurt her. And it was the worst thing for me. So I said, okay, I'm going to try and sleep. So I went into my bed And next thing I could, the next thoughts were suicide and slashing images. And I was like, no, there's something wrong. And where I live, outside of the house was a COVID testing facility. So there was a lot of different people. So I put my coat on. I got my keys and I went outside and I said, here, take my coat and my, take my keys because I'm going crazy. There's something wrong. And I was walking up and down, convinced I was hearing voices. I sat down, I was crying. I was like, I've ruined my life. What's going on? And then suddenly I was okay again. And I was like, this is a bit strange, but I called the ambulance anyway. So the ambulance came, the mental health team came to check on me. I spoke to the mental health team and I said, no, it's okay. I already know what I need to do. I need therapy. So I started therapy. A couple of weeks on after that. And when I look back at some of the documents that I was sent by Talk Wandsworth, it said symptoms of OCD, but I didn't read that and I didn't register that. I didn't understand OCD in that sense. So what happened after that was I was out with one of my friends and my inner narrative just wouldn't stop going. I think it was anxiety. It just kept cracking, kept going. And I was on the bus and I was looking at someone and I just had a thought that came through my head that said, fight them. And I started panicking. I was like, what the hell? So I got off the bus and I cried. I had another breakdown. Then I was okay. Then what happened was I went to a shop. So I'm from Trinidad and there was a Trinidadian shop near the area where I live. While my friend was eating food, then the suicide thought hit. And I saw an image of myself jumping off a bridge and I just panicked again. Ordered an Uber, got home, called all my friends, and I said to them, I'm suicidal, I'm depressed, I'm going to die. I said, I want to die, I don't want to be alive anymore. It's as simple as that. So some of my friends stayed with me for a while. And then after that, when my friends could no longer stay with me, I just couldn't exist. I was really depressed, I couldn't eat, couldn't shower, I couldn't do many things. One Saturday I woke up and it was too much. There were too many thoughts in my head. I felt like my inner narrative was just always going. It was always going. So I was desperate for help. So I looked on the internet and via my Instagram algorithm, I found a woman called the Anxiety Whisperer, Emma Garrick, who's a Scottish lady. And this was on a Saturday, so she wasn't working. So I pleaded with her. I'm like, please, can you pick up the phone call to me? Please. I said, I don't know what's going on in my head. Please, I need help. And I was absolutely crying my eyes out because I was like, I said, am I going to rape someone? Am I going to hurt someone? Am I gay? Am I suicidal? And she said to me, Sean, she said, it's OCD. And I get a bit emotional thinking about it sometimes because I pleaded for the NHS for help and the NHS couldn't help me. They suggested a book for me to read, which I actually got really recently, which was Break Free from OCD. Yeah. That was the book that they recommended to me. And that's all they could do for me because they said the waiting list was ridiculously long. And I had given up hope. So when I spoke to Emma and she explained to me, she said, we're going to get you better. We're going to get you well, Sean. She said, you're going to get better. She said, I promise you. So therapy began on the Monday. And after that phone call on Saturday and Sunday, I waited for time to swallow me up and to eat me whole. I didn't want anything else. I just wanted to speak to Emma. And I cried for several therapy sessions. I cried and I said, why am I having these thoughts? And she explained all of OCD to me. And it was funny because she was really patient with me, really kind, and we still talk to this day. She's still my therapist. And I often say, if it wasn't for Emma, I don't think I'd have been here anymore. I don't think I would have been able to understand what was going on in my head. I wouldn't have been able to understand. And yeah, that's just one part of the story. Now, so that was back in April. In June, I tore my ACL, tore my MCL, tore my meniscus, and fractured my leg in football. So that was another thing I had to deal with. Then after that, I contracted pneumonia. And when I had pneumonia in the hospital, the harm OCD got worse. I was looking for ways to try and end my life. And then when I went to try and do it, it's almost as if my brain snapped and went, whoa, what the hell are we doing? Then I had another breakdown. So I had to handle that too. And then recently, about 2 weeks ago, I found out my cousin had been murdered. So it's been a tough time. And then on top of that, if you want to add more to the cherry, I found out that my mum has been hiding potential ADHD diagnosis about me. So I found that out when I was looking for medical documents to try and claim some insurance for my knee. In the year 2000, I was diagnosed with ADHD. So all of this had happened in this big time, and I'm 28 years old. I know I look young, but it just feels like I've been on this tumultuous journey with OCD, ADHD, pneumonia, then tearing my knee, and then my cousin being murdered. It's been an insane time, but thanks to my therapist, I'm still here, most importantly. And this is why I'm telling my story now, because especially being from the Black community, a lot of Black people do not speak about OCD. And I know for sure there's Black people that have OCD, because when I wrote my articles for certain platforms, a lot of Black people reached out to me and were like, Sean, oh my God, I thought I was the only one. I'm like, you're definitely not the only one. I've had every thought you could imagine. I have to remind myself, that's not who I am. It's just OCD doing its thing. So yeah, I realize I've gone on a bit of a rant, but hopefully that explains a little bit of my journey.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for sharing. Sorry to hear about your cousin.
No, thank you.
And just everything really that's gone on. And so a few questions from me is, so you had that dream that kind of triggered it all. Was there symptoms of OCD prior to the dream, do you think?
So I think there were symptoms beforehand. And again, since we're having a very open and a very honest conversation, unfortunately, my very first relationship, my girlfriend at the time, she had cheated on me and she had given me chlamydia. So I had to sort, that was one thing. And I was thought, oh, I was okay. I always had a little bit of a worry about chlamydia in my head, but I was able to let it go. There was a girl that I had dated after that, couple relationships after that. And what happened was, one time when I went to go and wee on the toilet, it felt like blades of glass were coming out of my penis. And I was like, no, there's something wrong. I'm like, this is not normal. So I called her up and I said to her, what's going on? Like, you're the only person that I had been sleeping with at the time. And she said, oh, she didn't want to say anything. And I said, what's going on? Because you're the only person I'm sleeping with, but am I the only person you're sleeping with? She basically told me she had traces of chlamydia. So I went to the sexual health clinic the next day. And they said there's no such thing as traces of chlamydia. You either have it or you don't. So I took the tablets for that. That was one thing. And I had to deal with the anxiety about that. So every time I would go to wee, I was constantly worried that I had something. But I was able to bat it off. It was only every time I'd go for a wee, right? Yeah. I was able to just be like, oh yeah, whatever, cool. Maybe I'm a bit dehydrated. Or the thought would come into my head and I'd be like, no, I'm okay. I'm fine. Then to add the cherry to the cake, the third time, I was with someone. And I asked them, I said, I'm clean. I always get checked. Are you clean? She said, oh, she hasn't been checked. So I asked, you know, obviously, how many people have you been with within this week? She was like, 3 people. And I was just a bit like, all right, cool. People are going to do whatever they're going to do, but just be responsible. Yeah. So then she goes and gets checked out. And guess what she has? Chlamydia. So essentially, I'd caught it 3 times. And that started a new fueling of an anxiety. So I started to make sure I was hydrating myself. I started to make sure that if I was going to the toilet and there's a single bit of pain, I would run to the clinic. And they basically kept saying to me, why do I keep coming back? And I said, I don't know. There's just something I can't come to terms with. No matter if I see there's no chlamydia, I'm convinced it was something else. And it got so bad that I paid £300 for a same-day test just to prove I didn't have chlamydia or any other sexual disease or infection, sorry. Then the new thought was HIV. I just woke up randomly one day and I was convinced I had HIV. And I laugh about it now because it's very irrational. So I got tested for that. But then that thought went. That thought just dissipated. But and then that's when it migrated onto the gay dream and the homosexuality, then the sexual assault, and then the suicide. So it's my theme is pretty much harm OCD. Harm OCD is the one that gets to me the most.
Yeah, well, I mean... You see how it triggered you and it kind of, it started off slow, but then ramped up and then the dream just like gasoline to the fire, or fuel to the fire.
Oh, absolutely. Even recently, I was with one of my friends and I'm not sure if you've ever had these moments of depersonalization and derealization where my therapist explains to me, it's essentially the brain getting overwhelmed and it's just trying to protect you. I was talking to my friend normally and then boom, it just felt like my senses had hit flight mode. And I was just like, what is going on? Is this real? And I was still present, but it felt like the exact same breakdown feeling I had before with OCD. So what I did last time was I tried to tough it out. And this time I said, all right, I'm okay, but let me get home. So again, I ordered the Uber and I got home, spoke to my therapist. And she said, you're going to be okay. She said, it's just your brain trying to protect you. So I just had a nap, woke up, and I got on with my day afterwards. But this is what I tell people, that OCD is, it can be a beast of burden to live with, but in a very strange way, OCD was the worst thing to ever happen to me, but I'm going to be the worst thing that ever happens to OCD. That's my mentality. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. And with so you found out about the ADHD diagnosis. How did you feel when you kind of stumbled across that?
So I think living with a Caribbean, being Caribbean, so I'm Trinidadian, as I said previously, the Caribbean mentality is a bit hidden. They don't really believe in mental health. My mum's therapy is the church. And I think, so my dad died on Christmas Day when I was 6 years old. Mm-hmm. And it traumatized my mum. My mum definitely has some sort of PTSD from that. And the only way for me to explain that is my mum and my dad were the closest, and my dad was an amazing person. He loved me. He cared for me. He really was the backbone of the house. When my dad died, it crushed my mum. I think I was at an age when I couldn't really comprehend. And my mum went through 6 months of depression. She left her keys on top of the car, shoes on top of the car. Keys in the door. She had a panic attack on the way. I remember the police had to drive us home from Epsom. And I watched my mom just go through quite a lot. And she's a tough woman. She's really strong. But she's never dealt with what happened with my dad. And I think in many ways, I've had to deal with things that are going on as a result of it, you know, trickling down in some aspects. Yeah. But I think the ADHD diagnosis, I always knew my mom has hidden stuff from me. And I know she probably does it with her best intentions. Yeah. But as me and my therapist have said, is that my mum's got a bit of an ostrich effect, where she just buries her head in the sand, and it's almost as if you pretend it doesn't exist, it doesn't exist. So ADHD diagnosis, I'm not sure how much ADHD I have now, and I mean that in the sense of I've been able to get on with life, so I'm trying to be very careful to not allow it to be a self-fulfilling prophecy. I might want to get tested again. But my therapist believes that my ADHD diagnosis has allowed me to fixate on getting better with OCD, and it's allowed me to want to push my story out there, and it's allowed me to give it my singular focus and all the energy that I can. So in many ways. And then recently, when I was cleaning out my mum's room, I found ADHD papers that were giving my mum advice on how to help a child with ADHD. So it's clearly a reality of some sorts, right? So... But I'm surprised my mum hid it from me, because I'm a bit hurt by it. I feel a bit betrayed. But going into my empathetic side, doing therapy and understanding the Caribbean mentality more, I've started to become a little bit more forgiving, I suppose. Yeah. So I'm going to try and approach the conversation with my mum and say, "Mum, I know times were hard for you. I really wish you had told me about the ADHD, because I've got a master's. I've got essentially 4 degrees, right? Mm. I could have got extra assistance, but... what you don't know doesn't hurt you, right? Ignorance is bliss. So, yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah, tough. And like you say, I'm sure she had the best intentions. And but, yeah, okay. You sound like maybe the ADHD is kind of driven you now. Like, you're just super driven, and that's why you got the degrees, and you're willing to put the story out. And
yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. And you mentioned... Black people generally don't speak up around mental health. And
yes.
And you know, I'm a therapist myself, and I've read some of the research on that. And there's various factors. And it's not just Black people. We could look at the Muslim community, don't typically speak up either. I had a Muslim girl on the podcast share her side of that as well. And like, you know, in 340 odd episodes, I've really struggled to get arguably anyone of color to come on the show. And I guess just from your side, why is that, do you think?
So it's very interesting. When I saw the work that you were doing, and I want to work with OCD game changers. Yeah. And now what's really important to me is, as a young Black man, there's a niche and a space for me in the market to speak about OCD, which is quite sad, but we need to think about things on a marketing level, right?
Yeah.
Not many Black people speak up about mental health, because there's a hidden shame that comes with it. And especially with OCD, some of the thoughts that I've had, if I had gone to church and I had religious OCD, that would have kept me in my compulsions. So I'm actually working now with Orchard OCD with Nick Saru.
Yeah.
We were looking at, they've brought me on board because I'm full of ideas, brimming to it with so many different ideas on how I can use my platform to spread awareness. But I think a lot of it comes from shame, guilt. I think a lot of it is also colonization. I think a lot of the conversations we would have had prior Western involvement in the world has really shaped the way our culture operates and the way our culture dissolves down to the younger generation. I think I'm the second generation Caribbean in the UK in my family. And the way I've been brought up with certain Western ideals and values, I speak about it openly because hiding does nothing. A story shared is a burden halfened, is my mentality. And I know from my sharing my articles that how many people, Caribbean and African, have reached out to me and said, I really respect you telling your story, but I couldn't do it myself. And it's because also people are afraid to be judged. You know, for me to say that I've got a mental illness, not as a pejorative, but as a descriptive, to describe what's going on in my mind, a lot of people see it as a negative. And in many ways, I liken it to using it as a string to my bow. It's something that adds a dimension and a layer to my story and something that I'll be able to recover from. But it's shame, it's guilt, it's a cultural thing. I think also as a young black man, it's also woven in ideas of masculinity and tropes of hyper-masculinity. And I know those sound like a lot of buzzwords to people, but I think if the shoe fits, wear it well. So for myself growing up, when I said to my mum, can we go to therapy together? My mum said, no, church is my therapy. And I'm like, mum, church is not therapy. That's a band-aid. We need to go and heal. We need to go and actually accept help. But I think there's a lot of different factors. I think it's multivariated, multi-layered. But I would say the crux will probably go down to culture. And I think culture pervades everything else. I think culture permeates completely in so many different facets. But the one thing I'm happy for is that I think my generation, we're opening up those doors of conversation. So I think it's going to change.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and including the wording or symptomology in like the DSM or the ICD, it's very Western. Yeah, and I think religion can play a big part in it. Like you said, I said Muslim earlier, but obviously it can be Christians too. Sometimes there's a stigma in the Christian faith. I heard mentioning that Muslim lady that came on, her dad was an imam, and
wow,
he initially was saying stuff like, you know, just pray more, read this bit from the Quran, and and after she got the diagnosis and educated him, he actually took it on board, and now when he's had people with OCD come to him since, and he's like, you know, absolutely read this part of the Quran, but you need to see a doctor because I think this is OCD. So yeah, but no, thank you for sharing your side of things there. I'm trying to think on your story. What else do I want to know? I guess how you're doing now. How's it going for you now?
So I think, as I said to you prior this recording, that there's still some tough days. There's still days I get a lot of anxiety, but I'm learning to work through it because I read a really good book called Rewire Your OCD Brain. It's a fantastic book. It's a great breakdown into science and a great breakdown into how you can actually rewire your OCD brain. Because we forget that neurogenesis and neuroplasticity exist. Your brain may be one way right now, but you can actually change the way your brain works. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean that it's not happening, right? Mm. So, but I'm doing a lot better now. I'm still, as I said, I'm still having tough days, but I'm on the whole more cheerful. And why I say I'm more cheerful is because I'm practicing mindfulness. So I do my journaling every day. And if I wake up and I'm really anxious on the morning, I practice mindfulness in the sense I write down how I feel. So I'm constantly practicing brain dumping. And I heard a really interesting statement that said, overthinking is poor mind management, right? So if you keep everything locked into your mind, it's almost like closing the door. Letting it out onto paper can be a great way to release, but people have other ways that they release. But meditation and journaling have been fantastic for me. Also, when I have certain thoughts, just accepting them and not fighting them, not going to war with the thoughts, I think have been very important for me. But I would say I'm really re-energized, refocused by my purpose and my passion now, which is to tell the story about OCD and to really help other people out there. So another thing I want to do is I want to give a TEDx talk on OCD in the UK. And why I say that is because when I type in OCD, the American narrative is massive. The American narrative is huge. So I'm working with Nick. I've just pitched an idea. So I'm giving you the juicy gossip right now. I've just pitched an idea that we want to do some research into the black community or the BAME community as a whole. How many people have OCD and how many people don't speak up about it? Because we need greater numbers, especially to do with OCD. So we know, obviously, OCD is severely underfunded and under-researched, that the average 89p is spent on the average OCD patient in the UK. Whereas if you think about cancer, I think it's about £2.75. if I remember correctly. So this is why I'm saying cancer is a business in some senses. Don't get me wrong, people suffer, but it's driven into a marketing business model more so than anything else. And OCD is debilitating for many people. So that's how I'm doing. I'm just driven, focused, and I wake up every day with a new sense of self and the way I want to give to this world. So I think in many ways, I've found and I've been aligned with my purpose.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's whenever I give advice to anyone, whenever I get the question around advocacy and like where to start, and I always say kind of find your niche. Like what do you want to be better? What do you want to be different? Or what's your message? You know, what's your unique story? And I think you're a good example of that. You know, you found your niche where, you know, there's not many Black people advocating anywhere, not including in America, for OCD.
Yeah.
So there's a huge need there, you know? So that's a great place to start. So yeah, good work. Okay. So in your journey so far, what do you think has been the biggest like epiphany or light bulb moment in your recovery?
The biggest light bulb moment was there was a morning when I woke up and I thought, why am I stressing about thoughts? Thoughts, as David Goggins says, thoughts can't hurt me. Thoughts really cannot hurt me. It's the power I give to these thoughts. It's the weight I put on these thoughts. It's because I know they're so against my values and who I am as a person, I'm allowing it to stress me out. That was one of my biggest light bulb moments. But also in a very strange way to people with OCD and to people who know people with OCD, listen to me. And listen to me very carefully. The fact you have these thoughts and they're ego dystonic is actually bittersweet because it shows you who you are, who you are not, who you will be, and most definitely who you won't ever be. That tells you something. That was one of my biggest light bulb moments where I'm like, why am I stressing? I woke up and there's just some days when the thoughts just feel absolutely irrelevant. That was my biggest light bulb moment. But I think another one of my biggest light bulb moments was I realized before OCD, before my OCD diagnosis, I was allowing myself to procrastinate. And now I understand procrastination is an emotional response because people forget if you procrastinate, you're putting off something because it makes you feel a certain kind of way. But I realized that I need to pick myself up and get myself back out into this world, that I've got so much more work to do. My time is not over yet. No matter how bad I might feel for a moment or how I might feel for a few minutes or hours or days, I've got a purpose now. So that I would say is one of my biggest light bulb moments.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, purpose and meaning is so important. And yeah, I like that you woke up and you had that like diffusion, that detachment from your thoughts, and these are just thoughts. I think that's such an important goal for everyone with OCD. It's hard to get there sometimes, but when it clicks, it's such a learning.
But my one goes in and out. So there's some days I don't always feel like that. Don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But for the most part, there's days when I'm just like, oh yeah, OCD, do whatever you've got to do. I'm going to get on with my day.
Yeah, absolutely. And the more you practice the skills you've been doing, the bigger those gaps will get, hopefully.
Absolutely.
So next question then is around similar, but the flip side of that is, what was a big roadblock for you to get in where you are?
The biggest roadblock I would say is the NHS. It's not the NHS's fault. There's a huge backlog, but when I was begging and pleading for help because I was on what felt like mentally death's door, I called Samaritans 3 nights in a row, convinced I was suicidal. I wrote suicide notes. I was so convinced, and I was thinking, how am I going to do it? Am I going to jump off a bridge? Am I going to put books in my bag? Am I going to take pills? And I was just thinking, these are all painful ways to go. And I said, if I don't sleep, I'm going to kill myself. And I woke up, and the very first thing that came to my head was, why am I thinking like that? You know, but that's because I had gone up on medication, so it was very difficult for me to sleep. The insomnia was a bit hard. And I love sleep, and I think OCD knows that, so it always tries to catch me all the time, being like, we're not going to sleep. And I just keep practicing my meditation, keep practicing my journaling, and I always end up sleeping. But yeah, I'd say the NHS at the time was probably the really biggest roadblock, because I was pleading for help, and I just couldn't get the help that I needed. I really wanted to get the help, really, really did, but yeah, I'd say, and I had to look for private institutions, organizations, and charities to help me. Yeah, I would say that would be it. Also, probably people's opinions on OCD. A lot of people don't understand OCD, but that's of no fault of their own. It's it's still a very misunderstood, you know, mental illness where people think it's just about cleaning. There's a lot more to OCD.
So yeah, you know, with the NHS, you know, as you said, they can't, they're doing their best, but they're deeply underfunded in the mental health sector, and they're just struggling to fulfill people. And yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, my journey was a bit before yours. It was early 2000s, and yeah, I pretty much got the same thing of here's a book, you know, go read this. I mean, I was 17 at the time. I didn't read at all back then, so I didn't read the book, you know. So I struggled for another decade, and then I went private, because at that point there was really, really long wait lists. But yeah, they sometimes see people quite quickly, and sometimes they do very good work. But yeah, there's too many people and not enough therapists on the NHS, unfortunately.
It's funny when you talk about books, because I got given When I See Blue, which is another book about OCD by Lily Bailey. Mm-hmm. And then also this one, Everything You Need to Know About OCD. Yeah. So there's some great books. And I do recommend, obviously, reading. And I'm reading because I think the more you understand OCD is, the more you understand it's just your brain trying to protect you. Yeah. And it's just a slight malfunction that can be retrained as time goes on. And people forget it's your brain's job to create thoughts. It's, you know, your mind is just telling your brain a story, but it doesn't mean that story is true. So that's something else I've had to really realize. But that's what I've learned from reading. So I definitely recommend, if people do like reading, or if you don't, find another way to absorb the information, but definitely get a little bit clued up on OCD.
Yeah, spot on. And yeah, I, like we said, OCD is a story. It's a story our brain's telling us. And when we buy into that story, we suffer. And when the times we're able to distance ourselves from it a bit, we can see it as a story, and it's slightly easier to deal with.
Yeah.
Okay, so words of hope for anyone listening who may be suffering right now.
You are not alone. We are not alone. We will look after one another. And if people want to realize, if you want words of hope, the individuals in the world that suffer from OCD, Justin Timberlake, Jessica Alba, Donald Trump, regardless of what you think about him, Leonardo DiCaprio, there's so many of these people that suffer from OCD. NF, the Christian rapper, also has OCD. There's so many people out there that have OCD, and they've been able to lead a happy, healthy life. But one of my biggest words of hope is to remember it is something you can recover from. I genuinely believed recovery was impossible, and I'm still on my path to recovery. I'm still learning every day. I'm still waking up at some days that are hard, but it is possible. And if you can overcome OCD, imagine what else you're going to be able to overcome in your life. And it's to never lose hope. And I think quite often, motivation is something that fleets, but discipline is something that will keep you going. So even on those days when you know you're struggling, wake up and just do those basics. And that's a big achievement within itself. Yeah. And to have the right people around you, I think for me, having the right people around me has been so important. So when I tell them some of my thoughts, we can laugh at it. No matter how grave it is, they don't judge me. They understand what's going on. Yeah. That's been one of the biggest things that have helped me. But another piece of hope is just tell people your story. Don't hide. Don't shame. Or don't, you know, don't think that hiding is going to make it any better. The world needs to know more about OCD so we can get people like ourselves and people with really severe OCD more help, because there definitely needs to be more research and treatment done for people with OCD.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I like what you said about support and friends, and that came to me when you shared your story at the beginning about how you could call on them, or they came and stayed with you for a bit. And that's so important. Shame only exists in the dark, right? And it's hard to share, but the more people that share, the more normal it is, because then at that point, everyone's heard what OCD actually is. And then it's not something that's scary anymore. It's just, oh, it's OCD, you know, like, so that's hopefully the goal, and I think we're heading there slowly.
Definitely.
So if you could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old you, what'd you tell him?
If I could pick up the phone and call the 20-year-old me, what would I tell him? I'll tell him to stay focused on his goals. I'd say, let's get into therapy and start dealing with some parts of this OCD. And I think I'd also tell him to stop being so angry at the world. Because I was very angry at certain things. I was struggling to accept things. It's probably the nature of my personality in some aspects. I'm a very questioning, inquisitive individual. But I'll definitely say be less angry and be more accepting. Learn to accept more rather than to always fight. Yeah, that's some of the stuff I'd say. And I think I'd also say to myself, the money that you were spending on clothes, I remember I spent my very first Waitrose paycheck all on Nike trainers. I'd never do it again because I was so broke. I had to borrow money from my mum. I'd say don't spend all that money on shoes. Shoes are irrelevant. Shoes do not matter. So that's something else I'd make sure I tell myself. Yeah. And to just look forward to the future that you're always going to be okay. No matter what happens, you're still going to be around no matter what. That's something I'd definitely tell my 20-year-old self. I'd actually also say to my 20-year-old self, go and get a mentor. My therapist was actually saying to me, get a mentor that actually cares about me, not just someone I pay, that someone will just do the job, but get someone who actually is personally, emotionally, and mentally really invested in me. So that's something else I'll definitely tell my 20-year-old self.
Yeah. I think mentors are so important for young people. And like you said,
definitely.
They have to care. It's not just the money. Yeah, okay. I like that. Okay, you've got a billboard in central London. What do you want written on that billboard?
It's time we did a cleanup act on OCD. And it would be a picture of different people with OCD, different races, different colours, different sexes and genders to show how diverse OCD is and how that it's not just cleaning. Contamination OCD is one element of OCD. There's paedophilia OCD. There's harm OCD. There's existential OCD. There's homosexual OCD. There's so many different types. So I definitely have that as a billboard. And it's one of them would be, you can recover and you will recover. That would be on the billboard as well. That's something that really needs to happen. When I was out, I saw a mini poster from OCDaction.org, I think I saw. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. It's nice to see that. But it was so small. We need something bigger. We see cancer everywhere. We see prostate cancer everywhere. And also to let you know, Stuart, I pitched an article. Let me not mention the name of the publication, but it's a massive one, right? And I pitched a story about OCD. So they started off really interested. When I showed them the article, so obviously if anybody knows, the lifetime prevalence of those with OCD is 2-3%. And millions of people in the UK have OCD. Mm. I pitched the article to them. As I said, they were interested. And when they saw it, they said, oh, we don't have space for this anymore. We don't think we can support and advise people. So my team and I, we're writing a comprehensive argument against their statements to call them out because they're not actually helping suicide prevention. Because a lot of people with OCD are, I think it's last time I checked, are 10 times more likely to commit or to, you know, sit in the idea of suicide. We need to be helping those people. And a story like that can simply just help a lot of men out there because it's a male-based charity. So that's something else that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hopefully that works, that rebuttal, and it gets it through. Yeah, you're right. I think with OCD, the thing that really struck me about your story was you were getting bombarded by all these different themes of OCD, all these different intrusive thoughts. And it felt like when you spoke to your therapist, you didn't say this, but in my head, it was like just hearing that it's OCD and understanding that that's what's going on took away a lot of the pain, not completely, obviously, but just knowing that you weren't losing it, so to speak.
Oh, definitely. And that's why I say a story shared is a burden halved, because she's also had OCD herself. She had postnatal OCD. And she was able to just explain to me that she went through some of the hardest periods of her life with OCD, and she never believed that she would get well again, and she's been able to get well. And by speaking to someone who also I know really cares about me and really does want me to get better, I think also has helped to take away a lot of the pain. When things in my life I believe don't bother me, and I'll talk to my friend about it and I'm like, oh yeah, it's fine. And when I talk to my therapist and I cry about it, it's because I think I have a really safe space where I can be myself. I have someone I can truly be myself around, and someone that wants the best for me. So it really helps to take away the emotional pain, but it also adds to my cup. So when my cup was empty, my therapist has really allowed me to pour back into myself. So that's something that's been really, really crucial in my recovery process.
Yeah, that's awesome. And lastly, is there anything else you wish you could have said or shared today?
No, I feel like I've told you guys everything. As I said, I'm planning a TED Talk. I really want to deliver a TED Talk to give hope. And also, obviously, OCD is a disability and I do modeling. So I'm actually applying to a disabled modeling agency. Yeah. And I'm going to be using my modeling platform, my influencing platform, my podcasting platform to keep raising the profile of OCD. We are not alone anymore. As I said, OCD was the worst thing to ever happen to me, and I will be the worst thing to ever happen to OCD. I'm on a single mission to take down OCD and to live in a world where OCD perhaps doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. That's my dream, that's my goal, and that's my aim. And even if it's not fully attainable, we're going to work towards at least halving it, dropping it by a quarter. Mm-hmm. But we will no longer suffer in silence, in guilt, and in shame. And I want people to really know that as they hear this message. And if you want to, feel free to reach out to me. I'm more than happy to have a conversation, because even as a result of one of my articles, Stuart, a young man reached out to me and he said he was being in severe depression. And he said he doesn't want to leave his room. He's struggling in the gym. And I said to him, I gave him my number and I said, let's have a chat. He hasn't replied, but I'm going to try and message him again. But just to know that there's people out there seeing my work and they're finding hope, to know that they're not alone, regardless what's going on, we will come through this. Mm-hmm. And we will not be our thoughts. We are so much more. And remember, thoughts cannot hurt us.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, look, good luck on your mission. And I'll put the links to all your stuff in the show notes so people can find you that way. But yeah, man, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's been a pleasure to hear it, and I appreciate the work you're doing.
Thank you for listening to this week's podcast. If you enjoy the OCD Stories podcast and would like to support us with a one-time tip/donation, please go to theocdstories.com/support. All tips, no matter how large or small, are greatly appreciated. Please subscribe and rate the show wherever you listen to the podcast. And thank you to NoCD for supporting our work. If you want to find out more about NoCD, head to go.treatmyocd.com/theocdstories or click the link in the episode description. And quick disclaimer, guys, this podcast is not therapy. It is not a replacement for therapy. Please seek treatment from a trained professional. And until we speak, take care.